Good morning. May it please the court. I'd like to turn first to the issue of Presto's primary engagement. Under any reasonable reading of the statutory language and the SEC's test in TANAPA, this court should find that Presto is primarily engaged in the business of selling products. Turning first to TANAPA, it bears emphasis that in that case, the company had 94% of its assets invested in a stock and bond portfolio. But the SEC did not in any sense regard that as dispositive of the inquiry and instead emphasized the need to go through a searching analysis of all of the relevant facts and circumstances. And starting with the activities of the company, we submit that the district court paid essentially no attention to the activities of the company, and yet if you look at the language of the statute, the word engaged, under its ordinary meaning, refers to the activities that occupy one's time, what keeps you busy or employed. And the Supreme Court in the First National Bank versus Beach case, which was decided just 2 or 3 years actually before this statute was adopted, referred to the same phrase, primarily engaged, and said that and focused principally on how the defendant spent the major portion of his time, because that tells us much about what someone's primary engagement is.
But getting to the underlying purpose here, so isn't it your argument that the shareholders really wouldn't be that interested in this investment activity because it's really the equivalent of cash? You know, they've been contracting. You know, they've been contracting their business. They contract out more. They're patiently looking for acquisitions. Meanwhile, they're accumulating all this cash. So are these cash equivalents, these two investment vehicles, is that what you're arguing?
Your Honor, there are different issues in the case. One is whether or not the variable rate demand notes and the pre-refunded municipal bonds even count towards the 40% test in the statute.
Well, whether they count or not, it has to do with what kind of risk it is, right?
Well, that's right, Your Honor.
Investor protection. If they're just cash, then, you know, it's not anything the Investment Company Act is about. But there is risk, at least associated with that first thing, the variable
rate demand notes, which are really the functional equivalent of money markets, which the SEC treats as a cash item.
So what is this 7-day, you know, risk readjustment?
Within 7 days, you can essentially cash in the note for par value plus interest, and it's secured.
What can happen in 7 days?
Well, rates can change. Rates change.
What risk do the investors bear?
Risk similar to that which you have in a money market. But, Your Honor,
this company, right, this hedge fund, Amaranth, whatever it's called, just lost, you know, $3 billion in a week. So what kind of losses could National Presto sustain in a 7-day period with these variable rate notes?
I think quite limited, Your Honor. I mean, the whole point is to invest the cash in investments that are very safe, highly liquid. There's never been a default in this industry.
What is the safety feature? I'm curious about these instruments. I've never heard of them before.
Well, the safety is that they are secured by a letter of credit from a major bank, and therefore, in essence, there's never been a default in this sector.
So it's just interest rate changes within 7 days.
Interest rate changes.
That's the first one, the variable one. Now the second one, is there any risk associated with that?
The pre-refunded municipal bonds, the point about them is that they are secured by government securities that have been put in trust in order to ensure that the principal and the interest will be paid.
Is there any risk to those?
Not substantial risk.
Is there interest rate fluctuations there?
There could be. Well, the interest is guaranteed by the terms of the bond, and that in turn is guaranteed
how much in excess of the Treasury rate of return is the rate of interest?
Excuse me?
The only meaningful way to measure risk in financial instruments is to ask how much this rate of return exceeds the rate of return on Treasury instruments. So what's the gap between these instruments and treasuries?
I don't know the answer,
right.
Your Honor.
That's what tells you what the risk is.
But I will say this, that we know that the SEC has looked at these instruments, the pre-refunded municipal bonds, and says that they should be treated as the same as government securities.
I have another data question. Do we know what percentage of the total revenues of Presto comes from these investments as opposed to its operations?
Yes, Your Honor. We know that, not precisely these investments, but we know that 90% of its revenues comes from sales over the entire period of time.
You know, there's a lot of statement about gross revenue, but that's not interesting to me. I'm interested in net returns.
Well, in terms of the net, when you say net returns, do you mean after tax or pre-tax?
I'd be happy with both.
Okay, let me just say that the SEC has used pre-tax in a number of cases, but here they insisted on using after-tax.
Well,
but even if we look at after-tax.
Look, we can decide later which is legally relevant. I'm just interested in where I can find both pre-tax and after-tax in the record,
yes.
And then we can figure out what matters.
For the after-tax income, the Berry Report, Presto Exhibit 18 at page 10, shows that for the most recent three-year period, operating sources accounted for 60% to 80% of after-tax net income.
This is page 10 of the Berry Report, and where is this in the record?
It's in Exhibit 18. Similarly, so that shows that for the most recent 3 years, and TANAPA emphasize that current income and assets is the most important thing. And for the most recent years, it was 60% to 80% derived,
right. Now,
even
after
tax.
Does the Berry Report have both pre- and after tax?
No, it does not. In order to get pre-tax, you need to look at the earnings statements, which are spread throughout the appendix
You didn't think it might be a good idea to put this all in one place?
Well, I apologize, Your Honor.
I'm not going to do the work myself.
And 9 out of 11 years show that even on a pre-tax basis that the majority of the revenue was derived from sales. Even if you look at the government's numbers.
But when you say things like a majority of the revenue.
There's no such thing as a majority of
revenues.
The
bulk, more than 50%?
More than 50% of the pre-tax income throughout this period was derived from sales, not investment income. And more than 50% of
the sales after-tax and investment divides up the world, is that?
Well, there's sales, and then there is what's called other income, and that includes investments as well as some sources of income that are not investments, but
the record doesn't
separate them out. But it bears emphasis that if you were to even take an average and not just look at the most recent numbers, but if you were to take an average of the after-tax income for the period 1994 to 2004, it would be about 53% of the after-tax income would be attributable to sales. And if you just excluded 2001, because that was a year when there were large losses due to plant closings, the number would be 58%. So in this case,
I don't understand large losses due to plant closing. Are you talking about accounting reserves or cash flow losses?
I can't explain the accounting for you, Your Honor. I do know that in those years they took large losses due to plant closings, which
skewed
the
numbers. Well, normally when a company says we're taking a loss, it means we're making an accounting entry, which is different from actual out-of-pocket expenditures.
I believe there were out-of-pocket expenditures, but I do know that it definitely dampened earnings for that year in 2001. And if you just take that out, you get to 58% over the entire period.
Management's principal job in a world where its earnings are taxed is to reduce its earnings for purposes of the tax collector while having a maximum cash flow for purposes of investors. So when somebody says they took something that reduce their taxable earnings doesn't necessarily tell me anything.
Well, what the record does tell us is that throughout the entire period of time, and certainly in the most recent years, the majority of the after-tax income was derived from sales operations, from sales of current products, and not from any investment activity. In addition, if we look at the nature of the assets, even if the variable rate demand notes and the government and the pre-refunded bonds were to count towards the 40%, the nature of those assets are perfectly consistent with the activities of an operating company. In TANAPA, the SEC stressed that the assets at issue there, the investment assets, were actually purchases of stock in the mining industry, and that the officers and directors were using their expertise in the mining industry in order to take equity positions in other mining companies, and the SEC referred to this as a well-known form of investment company activity.
All this sounds verbal, but you know, the reason I ask this question is the statute says primarily engaged in operations, and if it's your position that more than 50% of their net operating income comes from operations, that's a perfectly straightforward definition of primarily engaged in operations. And it seems to favor you. If less than 50% of their income is from operations, one would think that primarily sounds to me like 50% or more. Primarily test is not met. So figuring out what these numbers show could be really important.
But Your Honor, the SEC said in TANAPA that it's not just an income test. It's not just an asset test. It's a totality of the circumstances. Income does favor Presto. And I know of no SEC decision or court decision that has ever held that a company was an investment company when most of their after-tax income or their revenues was derived from operations. But in addition, if you look at the activities in TANAPA, the officers and directors didn't spend any time on an operating business. They spent their time on picking stocks. Here, it's exactly the opposite. Presto doesn't even employ a single professional investment advisor.
Clear. If it did, it could get much more for its money.
Because it's holding
it's
the money.
It's actually shocking that they're returning so little to their investors.
Well, and in fact, what they did, Your Honor, is that throughout the 90s, they thought that the acquisitions were overpriced. They've been applauded by certain financial magazines for essentially, you know, holding their cash. After the crash in the stock market in 2000, they then began to acquire companies again. It's a conservative.
I'm troubled by your emphasis on income. Because suppose a company had 95% of its assets in financial, speculative, wild stuff, and its management was incompetent, so it didn't generate any income. So, in fact, all its income came from its 5% operating assets. That would clearly be an investment company under the SEC's test, wouldn't it?
If all of its income came from its operating assets?
All of its income came from its operating assets because although its assets were primarily financial, that didn't generate any income because they were incompetently managed, right?
I think that the SEC is under TANAPA, you look at all of the factors. You don't just look at one. You don't just look at income or assets. You look at all of them, and it's a case-by-case analysis. And here, all of these factors in combination certainly indicate.
But the assets are relevant, right?
The assets are relevant, Your Honor. We agree that they're relevant, but the nature of the assets is relevant, too, here.
That's
and these
fine.
Are the.
I think your argument is strengthened the less risk is involved, the more these investments are like cash rather than like stocks or, you know. Derivatives or some other risky thing. I think you said somewhere that the SEC does not require diversification of these particular.
It under their diversification rules, they provide that the pre-refunded municipal bonds should be treated as government securities, which of course operating companies are entitled to hold without having it count against them towards the 40%. If I could reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Avery?
If it please the Court, my name is John Avery. I represent the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Could I ask you, just because I'm having trouble with a lot of things in this case, but Judge Posner talks about risk being the important factor to look at here, how much risk is involved, and I certainly think that's correct. But we ordinarily think of, of government securities as not being particularly risky. I mean, that's I think is correct, isn't it? And how these are classified by the Securities and Exchange Commission, these, what are the PRMBs, they're classified as government securities for some purposes, but not for others. Can you explain that and why that should be something that we should be concerned about?
Well, first of all, it's not so much an issue of the SEC categorizing these different things. It's really Congress that categorized them, but gave the SEC exemptive authority to provide exemptions where appropriate. And, of course, the SEC can do that after notice and comment. It's like a rulemaking procedure. The question came up for one part of the Act, the diversification requirements of Section 5 of the Act, as to whether it wouldn't be appropriate to treat these pre-refunded municipal bonds as essentially a holding of the underlying government securities. Apparently these things are secured, in effect, by a deposit of government securities. But the Commission didn't undertake this sort of an exemptive proceeding with respect to Section 3 of the Act, which is at issue here.
What sense does that make? I don't understand you. If these are riskless securities, or no more risky than, you know, federal government securities, what's your why do you want to put this company under the Investment Company Act?
Judge Posner, if National Presto had come to the Commission seeking an exemption on the basis that pre-refunded municipal bonds perhaps should be considered...
Perhaps. What's the perhaps about it?
Well, I'm saying if they came
answer my question. Why perhaps? Why did you
hedge? They're not the same.
The Commission said they were the same.
The Commission said they could be treated the same for the diversification provisions.
Why can they be treated the same when they're not the same? Are they riskier?
I think they're undoubtedly riskier. They pay a higher interest rate. And I believe you...
Judge Easterbrook's question.
I don't know. That's not in the record.
Kind of important, isn't it?
It is in the record that they pay a higher interest rate. It's not in the record as to how much of a higher interest rate.
It bothers me. You told the court that because Presto has more than 50% of its assets consistently made up of investment security, its primary engagement is obviously and definitely investment, and the court's inquiry is done. Aren't you changing the Tanafa rule?
That was a statement made in the district court, Your Honor, and I don't think that the district court picked up on that statement. I don't think they applied that statement, and I'm not making that statement.
You repudiate.
I agree.
The
five Tanopa factors are what...
But how about some underlying purpose? So presumably, if a company is, you know, an investment company, you want to regulate it to protect the investors. But if its non-operating assets are cash equivalents or have very low risk, well, why do you want to regulate it?
This is a company... That's an excellent question. This is a company that has been... has been far over the 40% threshold set by Congress.
Look, as you say, it's one of these mush tests. And presumably it's mush because whoever thought up the test, the SEC, they're concerned about the fact they don't want to subject to investment company regulation a company which just happens to find itself with a lot of financial assets because... You know, it's subcontract a lot of its work instead of manufacturing itself, or it's looking for acquisitions. It's waiting for prices to fall, and so meanwhile it's parking its money. If it put its money into short-term treasury notes, you wouldn't be arguing that it was an investment company, would you?
Probably not, Your Honor.
Probably not.
Well, in theory, you could still be an investment company under Section 3A1A.
Explain the sense of that. Explain the sense. Unless you think the SEC is irrational. If this company had all its money in short-term U.S. Treasury notes, why would you want to regulate it as an investment company?
It had all of its assets in U.S. government securities. It would be an investment company.
Excuse me?
If it had all of its assets in U.S.
government securities. It has the 40%, the 50%, whatever.
40%, 50%, you're absolutely right. First of all, government securities are excluded from the 40% test to begin with, so they wouldn't count. We wouldn't be here.
That gets back to my question, I think. Why do you want to include here the government securities in calculating whether they're over this 40% threshold?
It's not a matter of whether we want to include them. We were confronted with a company that for a long period of time was way past the threshold set by Congress. We first found out about this through articles in the press that said, gee, it looks like National Presto, it looks more like an investment company than an operating company. We investigated. We determined that, sure enough, they were way over the limit for a long time.
Are there investment companies that trade PRMBs and VRDNs? Are there
investment companies that hold them? Yes, absolutely.
Whose business is just trading those things? Is that a
money market funds? Money market funds are clearly investment companies and regulated as such, and yet their holdings tend to be things exactly like VRDNs. Yes.
Sure, but that's their business, right? That's your earlier point, that if you have 100% of your assets. But suppose Presto, bona fide, wants to be an operating company, wants to make acquisitions, but its business plan requires that it hold a large amount of its money in a liquid form.
Right.
So, and you say, well, if they had federal notes, treasury notes, they'd be fine. Well, what is it about these PRMBs that makes you concerned? Is it that there's significantly greater risk to investors, or do you have some other concern? Or is this just sort of a mechanical application of the statute?
I think it's the way I view it, it's a question of process. Again, if the company had come to the commission seeking an exemption
and had gone through, it's so horrible, right? Nothing slows down the wheels of commerce more than having to get a license from a government agency. And, of course, if that's what the law requires, that's what the law requires. But TANFA doesn't say that if you have any kind of investment assets, you have to go on bended knee to the SEC for an exemption. It has this mushy test. So why can't we say, look, on this mushy test, the risk to investors is so minimal here, it's so much like federal, like Treasury notes, that you flunked your own test.
TANFA actually was a case where the company had come to the commission seeking an exemption, something that...
You're so attached to that, right?
Well, it's because the alternative is in effect to say
The alternative is shocking. It's free market competition.
The alternative is that the commission should exercise its prosecutorial discretion in a way that seems counter to what Congress intended. Congress drew a 40% test.
I didn't understand that sentence.
Once the 40% test is met, we've demonstrated our case. It's then incumbent upon the company to make their case.
Well, you're redefining TANFA as just 40%.
TANFA is a test that
it was multi-factored. Now you say it's just 40%. Going back to your
if a company goes over 40%, but wants to demonstrate
over 40%, it has to get an exam. It has to go begging you for a license?
No, it can do what Presto has done here.
Take its chances.
Take its chances, right. Exactly.
So why do you criticize it?
I was just trying to answer.
You criticize. You say this is a case about process because they didn't ask for an exemption. They don't have to ask for an exemption if they're willing to take their chances with this multi-factor test applied by a court.
I was actually speaking of Presto seeking an exemption for the particular investments that it was holding, rather than for the five-factor test. I mean, you're right. It had a choice there. It could either ask for an exemption or it could put the test to the test, as it were.
But the question is, did it have some burden of showing that these are not the cash equivalents, that they are significantly more risky?
No.
If they're cash equivalents, you have no case.
If they're cash items, I have no case.
Well, if they're equivalent
is a term used in the statute.
If they're equivalent in risk to cash, how could your five-factor test, how could you prevail, be senseless?
They sure don't look like the sort of things that the commission has said would likely constitute cash items.
They look like that too.
Cash, checks, certificates of deposit, maybe. Even on that one, the commission said it depends on what your intent is. If your intent is to receive investment income from the certificate of deposit, then it's wouldn't be considered a cash item.
That's the most preposterous thing I've never heard such nonsense. Of course, you have an intent to receive income, obviously. You also have intent to hold a liquid asset which you might be able to use for an acquisition. Those aren't inconsistent intents. How could such a test be applied? I don't know. Intent to receive income?
If you have an investment intent, then it looks more like an investment security.
And how on earth how could that be an operational test?
Well,
intent.
Let me give you an example. When the staff issued a no-action letter concerning money market funds, the staff said that they would not recommend enforcement action against a company that went over 40% because it had its money in money market funds, in recognition of the fact that people use money market funds like a checking account. Now, I submit that VRDNs are nothing like a checking account. I can certainly understand that a checking account is a cash item, and I can understand the staff's position that a money market fund that's used like a checking account is a cash item.
You said that Treasury notes are so obviously an appropriate use of your extra cash that they're automatically exempt from the 40% rule.
I actually didn't say they were obviously an appropriate use for your excess cash.
Why are they exempt from the? Why are they
exempt? Because Congress exempted them.
Oh, you mean it makes no? You wouldn't exempt them if you were advising the SEC.
We don't know why Congress exempted it. We assume it's because there was a public policy in favor of encouraging investment in government securities.
You would, if it weren't for that public, if it weren't for the statute, you would not advise the SEC to exempt them from the 40% test. You would stick to checking accounts.
If I were Congress?
Not if you were Congress. You're Mr. Avery, and the chairman of the SEC asked you.
I would be concerned about government securities, just like I would be concerned about other securities, in that Congress's purpose, or one of its purposes, I think its main purpose in enacting the Investment Company Act, was to address the risks of unscrupulous managers when they're dealing with other people's money.
You can have that with a checking account, right?
Sure.
Indeed, so, you can have that if you don't meet the 40% trigger. Unscrupulous managers can line their own pocket from corporate assets and head for Venezuela.
Well, they can do that. But if you don't want to have to head to Venezuela, if you actually want to try to get away with it, I think you're much better off managing the money in ways that perhaps can involve self-dealing of the sort that the Act is designed to.
With Treasury notes? You mean Mr. Paulson could do that?
Yeah, you can sell the Treasury notes and buy other things pretty easily.
You can't do that with a checking account?
Right. That certainly doesn't distinguish Treasury notes from cash for this purpose. Cash, you don't even have to sell.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Avery. Ms. Mahoney, how much time does she have? 1 minute?
If I could go to the issue of the safety of the variable rate demand notes for a moment. During this entire period of time, Presto's accountants, pursuant to GAAP and pursuant to an opinion of FASB, actually accounted for the VRDNs as cash equivalents, and that has not been challenged as in any way misleading.
Well, were you able to find out the answer to my question, that is, what is the difference in the interest rate?
I don't know the answer.
Okay.
And I am sorry, but I will also tell you, Your Honor, that
perhaps this is something the parties would like to inform us of. If it's in the record, you could send us a letter explaining what that difference is.
I'd be happy to do
right.
so.
Well, I've got a different question, and it's something I should have asked you during your opening argument, which is whether this appeal is not moot. I gather that Presto has, since it was enjoined to register, Presto has indeed registered. Now, given that Presto is registered, is there any relief we could give you? You have to go through the whole deregistration application process anyway?
I certainly think it's within this court's equity powers to overturn that decree and say that the registration...
To unregister you...
To say that it was void ab initio, nunc pro tunc, whatever the phrase, but it certainly cannot be the case
that... Nunc pro tunc means that the court accurately records what should have been recorded earlier. It doesn't mean change the way the world worked.
Void ab initio?
The district court's opinion judgment is not void.
No, not the opinion. I'm talking about our filing.
Why didn't you ask for a stay?
Because there was a concern about whether we could establish the irreparable injury that's required, and certainly it is not. We do not regard it as moot because I think this court could say that our filing should be disregarded, that it should be treated as never having been filed, and that would be within the equity powers of the court, and we would ask this court to do so.
I'm not big on pretense as a judicial remedy. Right? Pretending that things that actually happened didn't happen, excusing people who didn't seek a stay from the consequences of their decisions.
Your Honor, the SEC has not suggested that this is moot, and if the court wants briefing on that, we would certainly be happy to supply it, but they have never suggested...
The SEC's brief does say that there's nothing more that can be done, and that indeed the whole appeal is pointless because all Presto has to do is deregister itself as an investment company. All the district court required is that Presto register itself, and it's now done that. And it can deregister itself tomorrow.
Well, Your Honor, there's also the issue of the judgment saying that we were an investment company for 10 years. That can certainly be reversed as well.
That's an opinion. The only judgment is that Presto must register as an investment company, and we review judgments, not opinions.
Well, we sought to deregister in January, and the SEC has done nothing on that. Certainly, it would seem that the court, in its equity powers, could order the SEC to grant the deregistration, but I think better yet would simply...
So that might be enough to keep it alive. If you've actually tried to deregister and the SEC is playing bureaucratic games...
We haven't done anything with it. It was filed in January. So I certainly think that there's ample relief that the court could give, and if the court would like briefing on the issue, we'd be happy to submit it. If there are no further questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mahoney and Mr. Avery.